everyone. This is the Stark Truth on Countercurrents Radio. I'm your host, Robert Stark. Today's guest is Marilyn Miller. He's the presidential candidate for the American Third Position Party. It's nice having you on the show. I interviewed you a while back when I was on the Voice of Reason Network.
Yes, no, it's good to be back with you, Robert.
So you recently traveled to Iran. I know you did an interview with Press TV.
Yes, I actually had a lot of interviews while I was there, and the Press TV has gotten quite a bit of exposure through YouTube and whatnot. It's been seen quite a bit.
So how did you get the idea to travel there? Were you invited? Was it a film festival you were invited to?
Yeah, actually, it's a twofold purpose. Initially, I am a filmmaker, and actually, I'm taking a bit of a detour this year by my involvement in politics because I was recruited earlier this year to be the presidential candidate for the American Third Position Party. And somewhat reluctantly, as politics really aren't my ambition, but I do see the need to develop an alternative two-party system and really to build a movement to represent traditional working-class Americans. So that's what my political involvement was all about. This trip to Iran, though, however, originated based on my career ambitions as a motion picture producer, and I was invited to the New Horizon First International Independent Film Festival in Tehran, and an exciting time.
So is this the first time you've traveled to Iran?
Yes, it's the first time I've been in the Middle East, and my expectations were conditioned a lot by American mainstream media, and I was pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed the country, really enjoyed the people, and they've been unfairly demonized, and I would certainly love to bring the message back to Americans that Iranians should not be our enemies. They were kind people to me, very hospitable, very devout people, and very much committed to family. So I really would love to see these war drums stop beating so that we can carry on a normal dialogue with nations which should be our friends like Iran.
Well, you talk about your impressions of the country. Can you go into sort of more detail? You were talking about how the image that most Americans have of that part of the world based on the media, so and the sort of contrast of what you experienced.
Well, they're a very accomplished people. They were very kind and soft-spoken, but they were very devout people. Of course, it's 98% Islamic. The people are not Arab, and some people make that mistake thinking they're Arab. They're not. They're Persian people, very much like the Europeans in the sense of their physical appearance, but a very friendly people, very kind to me. Of course, they are concerned with what's going on politically in the world. Their infrastructure, of course, in Tehran, it's a big city of 15 million, madhouse traffic situation over there. But they're building incredible monuments, buildings. Their infrastructure is catching up. And I really did not see much effect in the way of the sanctions. I think they're a pretty independent-minded people, and they're able to cope, and they have enough resources within their own nation that they're able to survive. But it is unfortunate that we're imposing these sanctions on a nation that should be our friends. Totally wrong, in my opinion.
I think that sort of disproves the notion that a lot of the neocons say that Iran is a suicidal country, that they're making those kind of investments in their future.
Yeah, no, I totally would disagree with that portrayal. A very kind people, and the kind of people that really want peace. And of course, I was there for a film festival, and people from all over the world were there attending this festival. And it was really Iran's effort to reach out and bridge cultural differences so that people from different perspectives could come together and have a forum where they could promote their projects and basically be an alternative to the controlled media that we experience here in America, which is very Zionist control. So I think this is a refreshing initiative to see this coming out of a country like Iran. And hopefully it'll lead to some alternative programs which will help to bring truth to people and help liberate us from the sense of understanding what's really going on.
And you were there to promote your film about the USS Liberty. Is that out yet?
Well, no, the screenplay has been written. It's ready for production. It's just a question of getting the funding support. And I wrote the screenplay about 2 years ago, and absolutely no support in America, and Hollywood will not provide support. simply because they're a Zionist protective industry, and this attacks the role of Zionism in our history. I first, of course, revealing what happened to the USS Liberty in 1967, but more importantly, connecting that to how American foreign policy was hijacked in the intervening time, and how today Zionism really determines our foreign policy, which is why, in my opinion, we're at war in the Middle East and continuing to do the things that that Israel and the Zionists in America would like us to do, rather than what is best for the American people or world peace.
When you were there, did you talk to people about, they asked them what is their perception of America is?
Yes, and most of them really love American people. And it was not just the Iranians, but people from other parts of the world as well. In fact, we had filmmakers from America, several, and some Jewish Americans. And the Iranian people really are not an anti-Semitic people at all. I was very impressed with their open attitude. But they are very much committed to truths and justice, and they do see and they're experiencing, in fact, the evils of Zionism in their part of the world. They've almost stood up as a lone force against the Palestinian occupation and trying to defuse the crisis in the Middle East. So I'm very hopeful that their efforts, and not just with this film festival, but they were also hosting the Non-Aligned Nations Movement, which took place the week before I got there. And that's really an alternative to the United Nations, a very powerful movement that we hear very little about in America. But 120 nations appeared for this, most of which were in defiance of our State Department and other Zionist forces, which were trying to convince them not to attend this. But they did anyway, and it shows the need for an alternative to the United Nations, which is so controlled by the members of the Security Council. So it's hopeful to me to see these initiatives come out of Iran, and we need to pay heed to them.
Did you meet Ahmadinejad?
I did actually on a couple of occasions. He attended a festival function where several people got to speak, and I was fortunate to be able to make a short presentation. And then President Ahmadinejad gave a wonderful speech afterwards where he reached out and was talking about the importance of alternative media and getting truce to the world so that we can preserve peace. And of course, in follow-up to that, I received a gift from him, as did several others. And I asked him for a private meeting, which he then granted. I was able to meet him at his offices a couple of days later, and I spent about 20 minutes with him in a very wonderful time.
What did he have to anything to say about your presidential campaign in the A3P?
Well, I think he was intrigued by the prospects that we do have an alternative developing, and I expressed my belief that America needs a viable third party, somebody that is not controlled by Zionist interests, which the Democrats and Republicans clearly are. And he was refreshed to hear that, and his big concern was that Iran cannot be vilified unfairly and that truce reach the American people. And he's the kind of person who has a firm handshake, looks you in the eye, And I really believe that he's taking care of the best interests of his people and trying to promote peace, and certainly not the demon that we are led to believe.
So your camp, you can talk about some of the – well, I want to get back to the thing – well, about the thing about Iran. What is some of the media coverage that you've received in the United States about this?
Well, you know, of course, it goes back to a demonization process, and Iran is depicted as a terrorist, really, you know, as radical fanatics, and the people are not that at all. And of course, it goes back to some misquotes when President Ahmadinejad talked about the lack of any viability for the Zionist state, and that was transcribed to mean that he said they were going to wipe them off the face of the earth, and other rhetoric, which simply was misinterpretations, and I think intentionally done so to demonize him and the Iranian people. But, you know, that truly is not the situation. And when you look at the facts and why do we have these sanctions against Iran, it makes no sense. They are signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They've been open to inspections, and there's been no evidence that they are, in fact, producing nuclear weapons. Their supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini, indicates and has declared a fatwa against it. It's not a part of their religious belief, and they don't support the development of nuclear weapons. of course, their biggest accuser is the state of Israel, which possesses probably in excess of 300 nuclear weapons, is not signatory to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Agreement, and is not open to inspections. And of course, they're the ones leading the charge and beating drums to try to involve America in more wars in the Middle East, somewhat as they did in falsely accusing Iraq of possessing weapons of mass destruction. So they clearly, to me, the Zionists are stretching way beyond any rational discourse in this. And we need to start assessing the facts and put American interests first and not the interests of Israel and Jewish Americans who tend to put their loyalty behind Israel rather than their American identity.
So you can talk about how your campaign has been going. I know that you've gotten ballot access in a number of states, Colorado being one of them.
Yes, we're also now on the ballot in Tennessee and in New Jersey, and we've got write-in stats in several other states. It may be possible for us to get on the ballot in a couple more yet, but for a first time out for a new party, it's pretty amazing that we've been able to do this with the very limited resources we have in terms of membership, in terms of funding support. I would love to see us form a coalition effort with possibly other parties or other movements and reach out to the Tea Party, reach out to the Occupy movements, people that have no leadership or no representation. And if we can bridge those to those groups, I think there's a tremendous potential for growth of a third party to really represent Mid-America.
So what are the you talked about the foreign policy in your trip to Iran. What are the top issues that you're focusing on right now?
Well, of course, you know, the issues that I'm looking at representing the party are first of all, securing our own borders here at home. And to do that, we could we need to, of course, end these wars, bring our troops home. And that would, you know, restore some sanity to our reputation throughout the world. And we can't afford to be policing the world. We're in about 140 nations, about 800 bases, and that's bankrupting us. It's bankrupting our reputation. And, of course, it's putting our lifeblood of our young people on the line. We need to end those. We need to secure our borders. And the American Third Position is very strong in trying to restore America to its traditions. And that means protecting our national identity. And right now with this immigration invasion, we've got people coming that don't speak our language, that are different races, different heritage, don't respect the American ways, and are not having an easy time assimilating into our culture. And that's a direct threat to America's survival. And we have to put the interests of the American, the natural citizens first. And especially when we have a job situation where Americans are out of work, multinational corporations have basically taken production from America and farmed it out to locations overseas where labor costs are very inexpensive. And America can't compete on that basis. So we need to do so many things, but one of the first things I would do is enact tariffs on goods coming into our country and stop these free trade agreements, which are no way fair to the American worker. They basically advantage foreign nations and multinational corporations at the expense of our workers. And of course, we should also be doing what we can to empower entrepreneurs and small business owners to give the government off their back, to cut down on the red tape and the taxes so that we can start to produce again here in America and release the patents, release the resources in our own country so that we can become again a producing nation rather than just a consuming nation.
Your recent article is about Iran. So this article, it was by Elizabeth Flock, and it says, it mentions about it. It's titled, Our State Department Should Be Meeting with Iran. So Obama's actually, he's never personally met with Ahmadinejad the way that you have.
No, and it's just criminal, in my opinion, that here we are a nation as powerful as America is and influencing everything that's going on in the world, and we don't even have a diplomatic outreach to a country like Iran. It's criminal, and I mentioned to President Ahmadinejad that it was unfortunate that I, as a private citizen, need to take the initiative when our State Department should be there.
Did he tell you what his sort of personal opinion is about the situation in America?
Well, I think he sees America as being controlled by Zionist interests, and not just politically, but media. And, of course, they're very aware of the negative influences of cultural Marxism and what has happened to our people as a result of decadence in our media and how that's promoted. So I think that's a strong concern to them, and probably one of the reasons they took the initiative for this film festival is they want an alternative that can create entertainment that presents truths and does so in a respectful manner that doesn't degrade people's dignity and doesn't destroy their sense of values.
I think that is a big issue with the media, of how sort of what is perceived, kind of the perception of what America is and American culture, and the sort of the influence of American media and how it spread to other parts of the world. So that is you're saying that's a big concern for Ahmadinejad, because it kind of reminds me, I think it was Sharon who said this, but it may have been Netanyahu. I think it was Sharon who said something about how he gave an example about how MTV is an effective tool of influencing the youth in countries like Iran.
Well, it's true, and it goes back to the influences of people like Edward Bernays, and people early on in the formation of our media realized the propagandistic power of media, and it can be used for a very positive effect or very negative effect. But especially, I think, in my opinion, since the mid-60s, it's been utilized to destroy the traditions of America, to attack our religion, to attack our families, to attack those things that made America special and such a powerful nation. And it's undermined us to the point now where the American family is under relentless attack. And we're seeing the effects now in every way. You know, we just don't have the strong country that we should have.
Last time, I think we did cover some of your platform issues. I think the issue that probably the establishment is going to bring up is the race issue. So you do have a part of your platform that addresses the race issue.
Yes, and I've always had the position of wanting to maintain the moral high ground. Now, there are some people that you might call them white nationalists, and they often get falsely branded as supremacists or racist. But for the most part, they have legitimate concerns. When you look at the demographic assault on our country and the fact that we've gone from 90% European derived to 65% and predicted to be a minority, that's a radical assault on a nation's identity. And these affirmative action programs, which clearly are nothing but institutionalized forms of discrimination that are designed to divide people and pit them against each other, and not just a negative effect for, say, the white races in America, but also for the black race and any other race that comes here. They lose a sense of self-worth and respect, and it's very damaging in pitting these groups against each other. You look at the black family, for example. Today, over 72% of black children are born out of wedlock. Federal government has provided crutches to basically give incentives for black workers not to work. They do much better by going on government payroll. And it's unfortunate that these kind of things are there, because they're taking away the sense of pride and the production potential that the black community and any community could have, and being able to improve their status. So it's just the whole thing works in a negative way. And I believe that if we stay on the moral high ground and don't attack others, there's no reason for one group to attack another group, but operate from the moral high ground and stand on principle behind our Constitution and what is right and fair. But first and foremost, protecting the interest of natural American citizens, because that's the government's obligation, not to make this a third world country by pouring in people from everywhere else. And while it's damaging our own peoples, I mean, it's just, it's criminal in my opinion.
Yeah. Cause the way the media, that's exactly how it is. The media is going to describe it as American third position they'll say things like, oh, it's a white supremacist party.
Well, they tried that. And in fact, they did that with me in my Wikipedia bio and went so far as to say that I had a white-only film company. And, of course, I was the only employee in the company. But my last film, we hired a co-star who was black. Our editor was Puerto Rican. And that's never been an issue with me. But they tried to paint me as something that I was not. And I believe it all originated with my assaults against Zionist control. of our media and our political arena. And if you dare to attack those, they're going to try to find some way to defame you, to brand you as something you're not. And unfortunate for us, they control the public discourse. So it's difficult to overcome those things.
I mean, their policies, in a sense, the way they kind of distort those terminologies, like call people racist. I mean, what they support is far more extreme than anything you support.
Well, I believe so. And when you look at the Zionist position in the state of Israel and what's going on to the Palestinian people, I mean, that is, you know, that is, it's evil in my opinion. It's a very racist state, and those people are living like prisoners, open air prisons, and the treatment of those people is just bizarre. And the American people really understood that, and I think especially if the Jewish American community really knew the evils of Zionism that they have supported at least since World War II, that they would put a stop to this immediately. 100 years ago, the Jewish American community was not Zionist; they were very much assimilating into American culture. And I would love to see that return to where they put America first.
What do you think caused that major change?
Well, of course, a lot of it was World War II, the outcome, and of course the victim status that was then associated with the Jewish people. But it was certainly not right to have them form a new state and to dispossess the native peoples of Palestine. That was certainly not the right solution. And in fact, a lot of the Jewish people in Europe wanted to return to their own lands and were denied that ability. It was basically the forces trying to create the Zionist state of Israel that were forcing that situation. And I'm convinced from my studies that it was the Rothschild banking emperor that was behind the creation of the state of Israel, designed through Zionism to be able to pit peoples against each other and unite the Jewish peoples behind the Zionist movement. Basically creating a great divide. And it's been unfortunate, but it's one of those movements that's been very destructive.
Okay, but I guess you'll get people say, you're a nationalist. They have their own country, or their opportunity for nationalism. That's kind of the response that some people might say.
Well, that's true, and I don't disagree with that. I am a nationalist. But having said that, I also believe that we need to put America first, those of us that live here in America. And right now, we've got dual citizens in so many critical positions of national security and in politics and our government. And to me, that is so wrong. When you have somebody that has a loyalty to another country that is in a critical position in our own country, that should not be allowed.
Exactly. And if you look at Romney and Obama, well, they just have loyalty to who's funding their campaigns. I've talked to some people who say if they were forced to pick between Romney and Obama, I've had people tell me, they'll vote for Romney just because he's white. But in some ways, Romney is more dangerous because he puts on this sort of phony sort of like all-American image, which in that sense, I think he's more dangerous than Obama.
Well, in fact, he just made a trip to Israel where he collected somewhere in the range of $25 million with other obligations totaling like $65 million in support of his campaign. And the reason he garnished that kind of support was his unquestioning devotion to the agenda of the Israelis and backing any kind of plans they may have for whether it's war against Iran or more oppressions of the Palestinians. It's just bizarre that he's putting his loyalties to another country and putting them out there during a campaign.
And you would say a lot more so than even Obama.
I would say certainly at this stage. Now, you know, I'm certainly no fan of President Obama. I think he's destroying us internally with his Marxist programs. But I think at least from the foreign affairs standpoint, he's probably less risky for a third world war evolving rather than Romney.
I think where sort of Obama's coming from is he's still beholden to the powerful interests, but he has this sort of leftist streak where his sympathies are with sort of like the brown people of the third world, and I guess that kind of could include the Arabs. So maybe for that reason he's not as hard line, he personally maybe he's not that hard line on some of the issues that Romney is, but he's still, I mean, Obama's still beholden to the a lot of the same powerful interest groups.
If the Zionist support that is funded him, and I think there was hope in the Middle East and throughout the world that Obama might lead America back to being a fair arbiter for peace throughout the world, but that hasn't proven to be. We're still involved in these wars. Of course, he escalated our involvement in Afghanistan. So people no longer trust the rhetoric. They make campaign promises and do the opposite. And really nothing changes when a Democrat replaces a Republican or vice versa. The policies in effect remain virtually unchanged.
Obama's really kept the status quo that he took over from George Bush. A lot of the people like in the Tea Party who are opposed, they're opposed to Obama, but then they supported Bush. And then they're saying they think Romney's going to bring about change, or the people who still support Obama. I mean, it's just remarkable how so many people are so oblivious. They're either oblivious to what's going on, or a lot of people are just, they feel that they have no choice and they have to vote for the lesser of two evils.
Well, I think that's a lot of it. I think people somewhat have given up. In my opinion, the Tea Party movement was really the Ron Paul movement, which was very effectively hijacked by the Republican establishment, just as the Democrats have hijacked, for the most part, a lot of elements of the Occupy movement. But I think those movements and what caused them to come into existence, come into being, was the need for representation, the need for leadership, and they're really not getting that from either party. And it's unfortunate, but it's still sitting there waiting for some sort of coalescing force, some leadership to emerge, and hopefully a third party could come together with the right platform and provide that representation.
And you, on your economic platform, you go over some of these issues that you talked about. I think you mentioned that the big issues are the trade issues of the manufacturing jobs, and you talk about the Federal Reserve.
Yes, we need to get back to a sound currency. Of course, the Federal Reserve as private bankers should not be issuing our currency and setting rates. That should be determined by the Treasury, and it should be gold or silver backed, some commodity backing to it. In my opinion, we should repudiate the interest charges that these bankers have laid on us through the years. And that's one step, of course, to get us a legitimate currency again. But then we got to get production going back in America. And that goes down to our trade agreements and goes down to giving incentives for producers here in America, rather than benefiting our competitors overseas.
And with the banking system, the libertarians they'll talk about the Federal Reserve, but I think it goes further than just sort of I think libertarians have a tendency to just focus on what the government is doing, but the private banking sector is really just as corrupt, and I think the root of it is really the root. I mean, I see sort of the root of these problems as being sort of usury in itself.
Well, that's true. I agree with you there. And libertarians, of course, are pretty much open borders people. And we tend to part company on that because I tend to be a combination of free market thinking, but also national sovereignty. And certain lines have to be drawn with that combination. But that's what made America great. What made America such a strong nation was being a nationalist, a sovereign state, but having a free enterprise and allowing our workers to be all they could be and to grow businesses here.
You talk about the free market enterprise and all that. You talk about how the libertarians and the conservatives say that that's sort of their number one priority, but it can't come at really at the expense of national sovereignty. And that's what's important to stress, because they put conservatives and libertarians are willing to put business interests before the national interest.
Right, and we have to have our national identity. I mean, it's inherent in our nature as people to be tribalistic. And if you look throughout history, whenever you've had multiculturalism, it ends, and ultimately things revert back to a nationalist state. Talk about diversity, and that we need to allow everybody into America, and we should honor diversity, differences of people. That truly will lead to the end of diversity. We need to respect nation sovereignties such that the Irelands of the future, the Germanys, the Japans can all retain their national identity, can retain their language and their customs and traditions and heritage. In that way, we truly do preserve not only national sovereignty, but their identity, their unique identity. And that is true diversity. We try to create a melting pot where there are no differences anymore. We're going to lose diversity. And we have special qualities that we need to stand up and protect.
And that's the thing about really with the word diversity is with the globalism. I mean, under globalism, everyone's going to end up becoming the same. And that's some of the issues like you were saying when you were in Iran and you talked to Ahmadinejad. I think I'm sure people in other parts of the world have a lot of the same concerns. And with globalism, everyone really loses their culture to mass consumerism. And that's, you kind of see that with the liberals and the conservatives. The liberals support multiculturalism. Well, the conservatives say we bring in. It's fine to have open border. It's fine to have mass immigration as long as we assimilate people. But it's really the end result, because I think it's important to define kind of what your national identity is. And I think in some ways it is a weakness in America. If you look at Japan, they have a very rigid sense of what it means to be Japanese. But America was sort of set up as an experiment, so the idea of what it means to be American has changed dramatically over time. And as I said, sort of if the liberals believe in multiculturalism, but with a lot of the mainstream Fox News type conservatives, their idea of being American is like just speaking English and shopping at Walmart.
Well, that's very true. And until about the mid-60s, we were able to preserve that sense of identity. But by the 60s, we were also attacked. Our families were attacked. We were made to feel guilty for past wrongs, whether they were real or imagined. And we, of course, with the Immigration Act of 1965, it turned everything upside down. We no longer allowed immigrants into this country on the basis of our needs and on the basis of respecting our percentages. In other words, if we would still allow 90% European-derived peoples into this nation, that would not have affected our demographics. But that all changed with the Immigration Act of 1965, and we were made to feel guilty for questioning or challenging that, which should be a nation's right and responsibility.
Can you go into some more detail about your policy on immigration? I think the issue of the illegal immigration is discussed a lot. Would you put a freeze on all legal immigration, or how would you tackle the issue of legal immigration? Because I know there's different. Some people are saying that we should put maybe a cap of like 250,000, and then there's some people saying that we should just have no more immigration. How would you tackle that issue specifically?
Well, at the present state, I would say we need a moratorium simply because we've got so many people out of work in our country that we can't take more. We've got 30 million illegal aliens in this country. And if we have legal immigrants coming in as well, taking what jobs that are disappearing. Now, if that would change, if we would get our production going again, if we would start to be a nation that could use more labor, more people coming into this country, then, of course, we could accept them. And our immigration policy needs to reflect some common sense, and that's why it needs massive reform. But with the current economy that we have right now, we just can't support much in the way of immigration. That could change. I would love to see a change if America became a productive country again. But again, whatever immigration we should welcome should be based on the needs of America in protection of our natural citizens.
And that goes back to the – well, you talked about the demographic issue. You talk about the demographic change and the importance to sort of keep a European majority. What do you say? A lot of your opponents are trying to say that you're going to infringe on the rights of minority groups, and that's obvious. That's obviously. I mean, I know that's completely false. But what is your response to people who say stuff like that?
Well, all I say is that I don't support anything that's institutionalized discrimination. Everybody should have the same opportunities, but you have to level that playing field. And those with the greater capabilities, those that are willing to work hard, will benefit under that situation. But when you have government intervening and making it a socialist environment where those that are necessarily working the hardest aren't being rewarded and those that are not are being rewarded, you've got a situation of where you've lost incentive, and it's certainly unfair and going to cause great resentments. We just need to level the playing field and allow anybody the opportunity to be what they can be, but we should not be forcing through government mandates, through media influence, our people to accept associations and situations that they're uncomfortable with and that are oppressing their own natural choices.
This ties in with the immigration issue. You also addressed the environmental issue in regards to mass immigration.
Well, yeah, it does affect us environmentally in a lot of ways. More people, of course, is if you're not able to deal with that influx of population. And of course, as it is right now, our infrastructure is not able to handle them in terms of our court system, our schools. We've got so many illegal aliens in our schools now. And of course, we can't support the expenditures for that. And we've also got the health benefits. We've got illegals even on Social Security and receiving benefits like that. And we just can't support those kind of things. And, of course, with our environment, too, we've got people living under conditions they shouldn't live in, which is damaging to our environment. It's creating crime in the streets, just not healthy.
Yeah, I see this. Oh, this is kind of a – someone writes under this post, fine as long as you're not applying any of the UN Agenda 21 policies. What specifically is that UN Agenda 21 about? I'm always hearing people talk about that.
Well, as I understand it, it's really the United Nations, a globalist perspective or agenda, which takes precedence over the sovereignty of nations, whether it be water rights, air, anything that might affect us environmentally would be determined by a body which is supreme to national sovereignty. And I don't believe in that. I believe nation states should have their own sovereignty and be able to make their own decisions and not submit to some global body.
That's the thing is the UN. I mean, the UN Agenda 21 is bad because it violates our nation's sovereignty. But I think with some people in the Patriot movement, they automatically think anything having to do with environmentalism or conservation is part of the UN Agenda 21. And at the same time, I think that's kind of silly of them to view any type of environmental preservation as being part of that agenda. What makes an agenda bad is the sovereignty issue.
Right. We at our own locations, our own states should be able to determine what's responsible environmentally. And if we're poisoning our waters, poisoning our lands, it should be up to the states and the localities to make those determinations and hopefully preserve the environment for future generations. But we shouldn't be following the dictates of some global entity.
We're getting towards the end. What else would you like to add about your campaign that we haven't covered?
Well, I think from the standpoint of the campaign, it's just all about growing a movement for the American people again so that we can get back to the vision of our founding fathers and get back to our Constitution. And to me, that involves shrinking the size of government, getting government out of our lives so that people have the freedoms of choice again, so that they can build, so they can be productive again and not have Big Brother telling them what they can and cannot do. That was never the vision of our founding fathers. In fact, America was created to fight just that thing. So we need to get back to that vision of our founding fathers. And both parties today, Democrats and Republicans, support the growth of government. It's a self-perpetuating system. They're rewarded by it. All the players in the system are rewarded by it. The military-industrial complex is rewarded by these wars. And of course, the banking establishment is rewarded by manipulating our economy, by creating wars. We need to lessen this monster of government and the controls that small groups of people can have over our lives and get back to where the individual has freedom again. And that's what this movement to me should be all about, is limiting government, getting representatives for the people at a local level to have a voice again. And that also means media. Our media is so controlled and is the greatest tool for this new world order. and the restriction of our liberties. We've got to have alternatives which bring truths to people and more responsible entertainment so that we're not degenerating like we are, to where we can respect those things that made us great, which were our families and our faith. And we just need to stand up for the goodness that made America such a great nation. And we've lost that. I don't think it's gone for good. I just think the American people have fallen asleep and they need to be awoken.
And just want to plug your website. The website, it's MerlinMiller2012.com.
Yes, and it's Merlin, just like the magician, M-E-R-L-I-N, MerlinMiller2012.com, and the film Americana-Pictures.com. The party also has a website, AmericanThirdPosition.com.
And you also, you can men talk about your vice presidential candidate is Virginia Abernathy.
Yes, Virginia's a sweetheart. She is actually professor emeritus at Vanderbilt University, a Harvard graduate, has incredible credentials from anthropology and psychology. Just a wonderful lady who's very much aware of the evils that have taken over our country and a strong patriot in trying to fight those. So I'm glad to have her on the ticket with me. She's just a great lady.
I'd like to thank Marilyn Miller for being on.
Well, thank you, Robert. It's been my pleasure.
That's all we have, and we'll be back with you next time.